We've got updates on the Andre Iguodala and Memphis situation.
And LaMelo Ball could be changing the path for prospects instead of going to college.
And the NBA has fixed tampering by signing, the Milwaukee Bucks for tampering with Giannis? It's the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Let's do this.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA, the daily podcast covering everything you want to know going on around the association. And on Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales. I'm Reds Army John, Reds Army underscore John. Get my name right, John, on Twitter. And I am the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast.
So we've got a bunch to cover today, and one of them is going to be really fun, but let's get to the serious topics first, starting with Andre Iguodala and the Memphis Grizzlies. They've kind of reached, a holding pattern here is kind of what it seems like, where he's not going to be with the team right now, and he's working on trying to potentially find a trade to another NBA franchise. The Memphis Grizzlies say they're not just going to buy him out. He's a valuable commodity, I guess. They shouldn't. Is this kind of the right move for everyone involved right now, John?
I think this is a good solution to an interesting problem. Iguodala has earned the ability to kind of pull this. I would say most players, I would probably say go to Memphis, be the good, good doobie, and go play basketball and understand that you're going to be traded at some point, maybe by mid-December when everybody else is eligible to be traded. But you got to go and suck it up and play for the bad team for now. But Iguodala he's just past that. I mean, he's at the end of his career. He's going to be 36. He clearly does not want to be playing in a situation with the Memphis Grizzlies. And the Grizzlies aren't going to buy out a $17 million contract. They're just not going to spend that money to let Iggy go to whatever, the Lakers or something. Like, that doesn't make any sense to pay that money to let him walk. So a big market team that can actually afford it suddenly pays him the veteran minimum because he's already getting his money from somewhere else. Iguodala has already said he's not going to leave money on the table. So at this point, when you're Memphis, and especially when you're rebuilding and there's a guy that people want, that teams want, you don't just let him go. Get something for him. Even if it's a second or 2 seconds or something, you let him go to get something in return, and maybe you use those picks as players, as part of another trade. But your whole point, if you're the Memphis Grizzlies, is to accumulate assets when you have the opportunity to accumulate these assets.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my read on this too. A couple interesting things I find with this, though, is that, I think if he were on the Warriors still and they were looking just to kind of move him and get rid of his salary, that maybe they owe it to Iguodala to kind of do right by him. But he was traded to Memphis basically in a salary dump so that the Golden State Warriors could sign as I blank on everybody here,
D'Angelo Russell.
Yes, there we go. That, Memphis doesn't owe this to him. They owe him the $17 million, which they will pay him whether he's with the team or not. And that's really all they have to do. And since they're going through a rebuild, I don't think they're really kind of worried about the perception of future free agents that if they don't give Andre Iguodala what he wants. The other thing is kind of interesting about this is it's somewhat of a mess that Andre Iguodala made himself. Didn't he play off the Rockets against the Warriors to get this big money deal for him and sure, inflated it, inflated his value? Now, I'm not saying he's not worth that, but he's, like you said, he's going to be 36 at $17 million. If you wanted to go to another situation, you got to kind of, potentially figure out that this could be a situation that will come up at some point in your career. But yeah, let him go try and find a trade, let his agent talk to other teams and just kind of leave it at that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no real risk. I've seen, and I understand the argument that look, you do right by Iggy. It comes back to you. The agents understand that you're doing them a favor by buying them out. It kind of curries some favor with the Players Association by letting a guy become a free agent and choose his destination. And you're seen as a front office that's willing to play ball with these guys. They are sort of still doing that.
Yeah.
And again, because it's Iggy, because he's 36, like him not playing for a month or two, that's not so bad.
I was going to say the same thing. This is probably good for him for this year, right?
Yeah. Sit out a couple of months like that. You don't need to prove anything between now and even the trade deadline. Like, so for him, I would say, Jake, yeah, this is absolutely chill out, work on your shot, but stay healthy. This is totally great for him.
Yeah, you know, this is a guy whose value, I think, goes up tremendously in the playoffs, and we've seen it for Golden State. He comes off the bench as the sixth man. His numbers don't look that good during the regular season. Then he ends up starting almost every game in the playoffs, partially due to some injuries that the Warriors sustained, and becomes insanely more valuable, but I think he'd be that on almost any playoff team.
Right.
You'd be resting him. You wouldn't be giving him a heavy workload during the regular season. This, at the trade deadline, should make him just even more appealing for everything.
Yeah, I think getting him those months off and allowing him to go talk and maybe figure out, let his agent go and say, hey, maybe this team, maybe that team. Like they understand what the financial parameters are. They understand what deals are out there that need to be made. Andre knows who he might want to play for. And the other thing that's good for Andre Iguodala is by sitting out a month or two and not needing to play, he gets to see how things play out. Do the Lakers really need him? You know, I'm assuming the Lakers would probably really need him because they could probably use. But, like, what's Houston going to do? What are these other contenders going to do? And you can sit there and be like, ah, you know what? I thought this situation would be good for me. But really, I like what this situation presents. And it might be something that I didn't realize I would want to be a part of. But I want to be a part of that now. And you never know what's going to present itself. So it allows him to kind of survey the landscape a bit.
No, that's actually a very good point of it, too, if he's looking for the best situation for him. You've mentioned the Lakers, and I think that's kind of the obvious candidate, particularly if he is bought out, that everyone just kind of assumes he would end up with. But if he's not, do you see a trade partner out there, you know, that just kind of jumps off the page at you immediately?
Well, it would have been Houston before the league stepped in and restructured Nene's contract, that $10 million contract. I believe it was structured as such specifically for an Andre Iguodala trade. I'm just guessing, but an Iguodala-ish trade where the target is making about what Iggy's making, around 17. You take that 10, you tack on a couple of other contracts like a Tyson Chandler, Thabo Sefolosha, Gerald Green, all of those like minimum $1.6 million deals. Guys you can tack on and who you can replace easily with minimum contracts. Like that would have been a pretty obvious landing spot to me. I'll be curious to see if a team in the East makes a move. Like, can Iggy go back to Philly? They could use a wing to play defense and kind of fill a role there off the bench. What about Indiana? Like some of those mid-tier teams, I don't know if it's exactly right for Boston, but those teams that are in that 2-3-4 range that might be thinking, hey, this could be something that gets us over the top. Or what the hell? Why not the Milwaukee Bucks if they're struggling and could use some extra help there? So I don't know. I haven't looked at any of those teams' books, so I kind of focused myself on the West. But I think any of these contending teams could make a play for Iguodala. And like I said, especially if the season opens up and certain things aren't happening, there's always a storyline that says, ugh, this isn't going quite like I thought. Maybe they could find themselves in some sort of need for an Iguodala-type player. What about Oh, what about the Portland Trailblazers? They're always kind of stuck.
And they're kind of, they've been shaking it up this offseason in moves that I kind of like, actually. And if they do decide to just kind of completely blow it up or move one of their big name guys, yeah, some of those salaries could match. But this is something that's probably not going to get resolved anytime soon. You'll probably hear us at some point in the future talking more about it here on the Locked On NBA podcast. So we're going to move on to some LaMelo Ball news as he's been climbing up draft charts before the season even starts. But before we get to that, has it been a long day at work? Are you still stuck there right now listening to the podcast? Well, treat yourself to the meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's promo code LOCKEDON. So, big news out of Australia with LaMelo Ball climbing up the draft charts. ESPN reporting on him, talking about how they have him now third in their mock draft. So, John, it's early. The season has not even started yet. We haven't even had media day for any teams yet, but we're already talking about the draft next year. You buying into the LaMelo Ball hype?
I think so. I mean, I think there's... You know, these things always have ebbs and flows. So the college season will roll around, and I'm sure there's going to be some more conversation around some of the other guys. You know, there are always going to be players that we didn't see coming, and all of a sudden they become sensations. Zion Williamson, for example, didn't go into last season as a sensation.
Nope.
He became one. So... I'm not surprised by anybody jumping up the draft charts, but LaMelo Ball, from what I can tell, and I admit I haven't watched a lot of him in the NBL, watched some of the highlights.
You don't have that NBL league pass?
Yeah, right. I've watched some of the highlights. Obviously, everybody looks good in highlights, but he's playing against pros. He's playing against men, grown men, in Australia, where being a grown man just is a little bit different. There's a little bit more edge to it in Australia. These are former NBA players as well. There's professional coaching. There's professional strength and conditioning. There's professional attitudes all the way around. Pressure. So for him to be succeeding there, that's pretty good because he's an 18-year-old kid, and that is encouraging to have somebody succeed like that in that environment. So I think the biggest impact that'll have, we still don't know exactly what LaMelo Ball will develop into. He's got the name, obviously, but the biggest impact I think that he'll have here is if he does stay in this top three, top five range, then I wonder how many of these young prospects will look at the NBL as their proving ground, and how many of these guys will, instead of going to Duke or Memphis or Kentucky, will decide to go down there, get paid, and try to develop themselves against tougher competition.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the more interesting thing to this to me than LaMelo Ball. So it sounds like LaMelo's just kind of grown into his frame more. His shot's pretty good. They're giving him comps to Luka Doncic, and it sounds like it's just near unanimous from scouts. Cool. It's good to hear he's succeeding. Yeah. That's kind of really all there is to this conversation about him. But it shows that maybe, like you said, there's alternatives to going to do a one-and-done year here in the U.S. and in college when there hadn't been these alternatives before. RJ Hampton's down there in Australia. He's expected to be a top five, top 10 pick, depending on how it all shakes out, as a guy who skipped going to college and was maybe one of the higher profile names to really ever do so. So I think these guys see, like you said, they can go and make money. You can get professional coaching. You can kind of get professional facilities. And you can just focus on being a basketball player. You don't have to deal with classes. You don't have to worry about, you know, should you talk to an agent, should you not, and all of the under the table stuff, which might be kind of blowing up a little bit now too. And you just focus on playing. And I think that's what a lot of these guys are looking for. And I think this is a really positive thing for the NBA. To find more avenues to get good people to go to, and then hopefully no one kind of falls by the wayside. So overall, I don't think this is hugely surprising. Go and prove yourself against better competition. It's not like if you're playing 1 year at Kentucky and you just go against some scrub school, it really proves anything, right?
Yeah, no, I think, and especially if more guys decide to do this stuff, we've seen a lot of college players go out and play great, but not, it doesn't translate to the NBA. Now, I don't know how this particularly translates to the NBA, but like I said before, they're playing against 25, 26, 27, 30-year-old guys. It's just a different level of physicality. It's a different level of seeing the game. It's, even if you say, well, the competition itself, the talent level itself isn't necessarily a ton better than an elite Division I school, it's the type of game that's being played that's more closely related to NBA basketball versus college basketball. And there's another challenge too. It's a harsh kind of environment, even in Australia, where at least you can understand the language.
That's actually a very good point.
But like, it's not like you're going off to
it's not
Latvia,
huge culture shock.
Like you did. You know, we've seen guys try to go to Europe, and okay, so you go play in a different league in a different country. That's hard, no matter where it is.
No, that's a good point. I spoke to Darius Morris, who was on the Pelicans for a little bit, and I think he played in Japan one year or China, and he said it was like unfun for him at times because he was so isolated because he didn't speak the language and wasn't like a fit into the culture.
Right. And like, I could go do it and be fine because I'm in my 40s and secure in myself, and I know that I can go and mingle and find a way to communicate without using language, or at least learn a thing. I'm an adult. These are 18-year-olds that are experiencing this extraordinary change that it's harder when you're younger. It's easier to kind of retreat into yourself at that age, especially when you're going up against guys that are almost twice your age and they're trying to beat the crap out of you, especially because they see you as this like phenom and you're there just to test yourself and they know that you're not there for the long term. Like it is a bit of a grinder down there. So it's not for everybody, but the success in that situation is encouraging. So while I do see it as kind of a possibility, an alternative to college, it's not immediately going to be an instant alternative to college because kids who grew up in Detroit or here in Boston or in New York, they're not going to want to go necessarily literally halfway around the world,
right,
to go play. They'd rather just say, you know what? If that dude's gone, that's one spot open at Duke. It's still a glamour school, a prestige school. I'm going to go there and do my thing and play well in March Madness. And you know, as well as I do, when you're a March Madness superstar, a darling, then you get that shine. So it's part of maybe an evolution in how these guys go. And I definitely enjoy seeing the NCAA kind of threatened in this way. But there are some real challenges that go along with it for sure.
Yeah, we'll see, because this is a trend that, like we were saying, could be developing. It's still not going to be, the huge shift of everything, but I'm going to be curious to see. Also, the Pelicans have a guy in there, and Didi Silva, who they took in the second round. They wanted him to specifically go play in Australia when he's Brazilian. I think it's kind of interesting that you're seeing maybe this be the specific league for everything, but we'll find out more about that in the future. Coming up on the show here, we are going to be talking about Giannis and tampering. And yeah, the NBA fixed it. Maybe we actually don't need to do the segment, but we'll at least touch on it here in a second. Before we do that, media days are coming in less than a week now. So make sure you are subscribed not only to the Locked On NBA podcast, but the Locked On podcast of whatever your favorite team is, because we're going to be back to 5 days a week all across the board talking about everything you want to know going into what is maybe the most intriguing season we've had in a very long time. So wherever you get your podcasts from, subscribe to Locked On NBA and subscribe to whatever the Locked On podcast is for your favorite team. So the NBA recently put in the new tampering rules, regulations, laws where they can force you to turn over phones and they can get your servers and randomly audit teams and they won't even tell you what information they're looking for. And we fixed tampering because the NBA leveled a new fine yesterday against the Milwaukee Bucks for tampering with This is like a check notes situation. Giannis, 50,000 for their GM, talking about how they will offer him the Supermax. Like this was any question or... Yeah, you guys get it. John, you're laughing because this has to be one of the stupidest things we've seen the NBA do in a while, right?
It's really hilarious to me, mostly because of the timing. Like, I get that there's a rule. Like, there's an obvious rule. And if you look at John Horst's quote, he says in the beginning part of it, first of all, the answer for now is that we can't talk and negotiate anything. So he knows that this is the rule, but then he immediately says, so Giannis basically a year from now will be eligible for a Supermax extension. At that time, of course, he will be offered a Supermax extension. Like, yeah, we all know. Like, is that even a question? But he broke a rule. And so he gets a $50,000 fine. Okay, but it comes like on the heels. Like the mics are probably still connected from Adam Silver's press conference where he's talking about taking away people's phones and talking about all of this stuff that is actually wrong with the NBA. So you have this moment where the NBA and Adam Silver stand there. Silver is standing there saying, it's my job to create tension. And he's saying, like, basically, I'm the boss and I have to fix this tampering thing because whatever Brooklyn did with Kyrie, and whatever Boston did with Kemba, whatever Kawhi did with Paul George, like all of that stuff, like, we can't be having that anymore. And then immediately John Horst talks about his own player and they're like, gotcha.
You're right. It's the timing that makes this so funny. Like the NBA should have waited like a week or two and then fined him for this. So it doesn't just come on the heels of all the changes with everything. It's like these rules are in theory in place to somewhat more protect small markets maybe. And then they go and fine the small market for like, not a big deal. Like, man, I understand if it's like you're talking about another team's player, even in passing and like casually, and then you go and like do this when it's your own guy and like, yeah, I get there's a rule, but you know, this is like, we need to evaluate this. And I don't know. It's just so funny because it was such a big deal over the changes. You know, the report coming out, I think from Sam Amick of The Athletic is in his interview he had with Adam Silver, that Adam Silver refuses to say specifically what they're looking for when they audit teams so that teams won't then like just completely go around what they're planning to audit. Yeah, it actually makes a ton of sense. But hey, let's go find the Milwaukee Bucks 50 grand today. It's just so dumb. And like, come on, wait a week.
This screamed for a Friday evening news dump press release where it's 6 o'clock. Nobody's really paying attention. Maybe some other big news. Like, you gotta wait. Like, this is, if you watch Star Wars, like, this is in, I forget which one, Empire, where Han Solo releases the Falcon into, like, the garbage. You know, when the.
I think it's Empire.
Right.
And you wait for the trash to go out, then you just drift away.
Wait for the trash to go, and then everybody takes off, and you drift away. Like, that's what this announcement should have been. Like, the NBA should have just had this kind of, like, understanding, like, ugh, this is a real, like, this is the letter of the law. And I'm not arguing that they shouldn't have fined them $50,000. It just should have found, like, that Friday evening, kind of, like, slide it into the ether of nothingness. Like, oh yeah, by the way, we fined these guys $50,000. Have a good weekend. Like, maybe do it like at the end of media day where people aren't really paying attention. Something where you could just like let this kind of simmer. Besides it becoming this hilarious joke that everybody can make fun of, it just, the timing is ridiculous.
It just makes it look like You know, are they actually going to do the right thing when it comes to the tampering rules that they just put into play? You know, it kind of like undercuts them a little bit too and hurts their whole point of everything because like, oh yeah, we're fixing tampering. It's like, this is what you do? This is fixing tampering? When it's like, no, they're probably going to go and do some real stuff. And it's just like, now no one believes that you're actually going to do that. And I think it kind of like undermines what they tried to do. And like you said, yeah. Just Friday, let's put this out there. By the way, maybe we don't even send a press. Like, they sent out a press release. Do you really need to do that? Just let the dude write it off on his taxes, and it's no big deal, and maybe that's how people find out. But it's like they made such a big deal about this, and it's like this isn't the right type of tampering that everyone kind of wants you to fix, even if they want you to fix it at all. Like, this is the wrong kind.
It's comedic.
Yeah, it's just funny. Like, thank you. It's a Tuesday, a Wednesday. We're happy to joke about things before things start to get serious as the season starts. So, yeah, there you go. So, I think that's going to do it for the show today, the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. And on Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I am John Corrales, at Reds Army underscore John on Twitter, and I am the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with you all next week.